John Mortimer presents The Trials of Marshall Hall. True stories from the archives of Britain's most celebrated criminal barrister, starring Tom Baker as Sir Edward Marshall Hall. The Black Trunk. Introduced by John Mortimer.
If you asked barristers of my generation what made them buy a wig and gown, they would say it wasn't because they thirsted after justice. It was because they'd read the life and cases of Edward Marshall Hall. Not a great lawyer, but a superb advocate. Tall, handsome, silver-tongued, he could dominate a courtroom and woo a jury as no one has before or since.
And do not forget, even she, at one time, was a beautiful and innocent child.
These were the days of great legal theatre, when judges played their fearful parts and the public gallery might reward a fine speech with spontaneous applause. No wonder we wanted to follow Marshall Hall's footsteps. On a chill spring night in 1894, when all respectable citizens were in their beds, under the fizzing yellow gas of a street lamp, an emaciated woman, old before her time, approaches a drunken man in the Euston Road. This unromantic encounter was the young Marshall Hall's great opportunity, the first murder trial he fought single-handed.
Hello, dear. Do you want a friend?
I don't need friends. Girlfriend now, maybe.
Oh, that's what I said. I've got a lovely room near here.
I can't walk, Arthur.
You've had a drink or two. Nothing wrong with that. Here, hold my arm.
The deal is struck. The pair return to the woman's room at 51 Grafton Street. But walls have ears, and so have landladies.
Mother, what is that noise?
It's her again, isn't it?
She knows an awful lot of men, Mummy. She must be a very friendly lady.
You brush your hair into bed with you.
But the night would not be peaceful. Mrs. Hutchins was soon awake again.
So can anybody sleep with these goings on? I'll speak to that woman in the morning. She's got to go.
Mrs. Hutchins?
Mrs. Herman? Oh, good morning. I wanted to speak to you, as a matter of fact.
I've come to tell you I'm leaving.
Eh?
I'm leaving. It doesn't suit me here.
It doesn't suit you?
So I'm off. I believe I've paid my rent. Goodbye. I've organised some men to come round to collect something off mine.
Oh?
A trunk.
And later in the morning, Mrs. Hutchins sees two men struggling down her stairs.
Mind the paint!
You what, missus?
You'll scratch the stairs.
You do it then.
Eh?
This thing weighs a ton.
You just get it out of here.
Blimey, O'Reilly.
But something is about to intrude on Mrs. Hutchins' long-hoped-for respectability.
Mum! Mummy, come quick, quick!
What is it?
The sink!
What?
The sink! There's blood in it!
Oh! Come away. Go in the room.
What?
Go, Sophie, go in the room, I tell you. I'm going to the police.
Hello, Mari.
Sergeant Kane.
Got yourself a new room, Mari? I
didn't like Grafton Street.
The other residents are a bit uncouth, were they?
I never said anything like that. I like a change, that's all.
A change?
Yes.
Nuisance is you have to pack and then unpack.
Doesn't worry me.
Still. I suppose most of what you have is in this trunk, is it?
You know me, Sergeant Kane.
I know what you are, Mari. I'm going to want to look inside. You got a key to this padlock? Come on. Ta. You look pale. Did you have a bad night?
When we were girls, my sister and me, in Austria, we used to keep our dollies in a trunk like that. We pretended the trunk was their house, the doll's house. Do you know what I mean, Sergeant Kane?
Is that what you got in here? Dolls?
You're going to see for yourself.
That's a bleeding big doll, Mari.
The body Sergeant Kane finds in the trunk is that of Henry Stevens, the elderly man Mari Herman had picked up on Euston Road the night before. She's charged with his murder. And so the due process of law begins. A solicitor is appointed, Arthur Newton, who brought so many briefs to Marshal Hall's chambers at Three Temple Gardens. Never an optimist, he's now certain he's on a loser.
Mr. Marshal Hall is out, sir.
What?
At an auction. A silver auction.
I don't care what sort of auction it is. Where is it?
Sotheby's, sir.
And who are you?
Mostyn, sir. I have the honour of being Mr. Marshal Hall's new...
Clerk.
Yes, sir.
You look like a clerk.
Thank you, sir.
What? If he comes back, keep him here, even if you have to sit on him.
What am I bid, then, for this James II two-handle Pollinger and cover?
The tall figure in the top hat, who stands amongst the other bidders in the salesroom, is no silversmith. At least, not by profession.
290?
£290 from Mr. Marshal Hall. Thank you, sir. Odd mine at 300. Thank you, sir. Are we done, gentlemen? At £300, this rather attractive...
310.
I must speak to you, sir.
Not now, Newton.
But shh.
Lord Naunton, your bid. At £310 to Mr. Marshal Hall. Sold to Mr. Marshal Hall.
Look at that, Newton. Pure English craftsmanship.
What?
Gazed upon an object of timeless beauty.
You've just bought that bowl, have you?
Not bowl, Newton. Porringer.
For how much?
I know, it's a crime to take it off them.
Well, well, Mr. Marshal Hall.
Mr. Silcock.
It isn't often that Sotheby's makes a handsome profit from you.
And is that what you believe you've done?
I'm surprised. It fetched quite that figure, yes.
A satisfactory day for you, then.
Very.
Sir, if I may interrupt, I have a brief to deliver.
I'll just collect and pay for my porringer, and then I'd better retire to lick my wounds, eh? Eh, Mr. Silcock?
Holloway Prison is looking particularly alluring in the spring sunshine, though spring is not a season that penetrates far behind its walls.
It's looking bad, isn't it, sir? She's a... Well, she's a...
A prostitute, Mostyn.
But an old man, with his head smashed in, and his money missing, and she tries to hide the body in a trunk. We're up against it, aren't we, sir?
Mostyn, either you are a help to me, or you are a hindrance.
Sir?
I give you leeway. You're new to this. You're inexperienced. I make allowances. But nerve-riddled lamentations I do not need. Steel, Mostyn.
Sir?
Our metal is steel. Her life depends upon it. Mrs. Herman, my name is Marshal Hall. Your solicitor, Mr. Newton, has done me the honour of appointing me to act as your defender.
All right.
You wish to enter a plea of self-defence, is that correct?
Yes.
In your own words, would you mind telling me exactly how Mr. Stevens was killed?
I gave the police my statement.
I know. Is there anything you wish to change?
No. What I said, I picked him up and brought him back to my room. I asked for money, for payment. I always ask in advance. I've been rooked before, so I always insist. But this one refused.
You asked for payment, he refused.
Yes. He said he didn't have enough.
But you didn't believe him?
No.
Were you angry with him?
He grabbed my throat. He pushed me down.
Where exactly on your throat did he
hold you? Round my throat. His fingers
round... You squeezed hard?
Yes, I couldn't breathe.
How hard?
Very hard.
You thought he was going to kill you?
Yes.
I want you to tell me how tightly he squeezed you. I am going to squeeze your wrist. Stop me when it feels as tight as his hands were around your throat.
What?
Permit me. Tighter than this?
Yes, much tighter.
Than this?
Tighter.
This?
He was going to kill me. I thought
you
he
You found
was...
a poker.
Yes, behind me. I hit him.
6 times.
I was frightened. Who did he think he was? He thought he could have me for nothing. Well, he couldn't, could he?
The case is looking good, sir.
You think so, Mostyn?
Well, don't you, sir?
Did you see how hard I held her wrist in there?
Well, I was surprised she didn't scream.
If someone squeezed her throat like that, cab!
Well, she'd choke.
And it would leave marks, that's the point. Did you see any marks?
No.
Neither did I.
Marshal Hall went into the original Old Bailey, now rebuilt. It was a dirty, broken-down building, which he said was a disgrace to the richest city in the world. All the same, it was his battleground and his theatre. And inside, the landlady, Mrs. Hutchins, is the first witness. Her arms are folded. Charles Matthews, also a performer and son of a well-known actress, is the prosecuting counsel.
Mrs. Hutchins, I detected a certain nervousness, as was sworn in just a moment ago.
Why?
I am nervous.
Don't be. You are amongst friends. Mrs. Hutchins, would you be so good as to tell the court what you heard on the night of the 15th of March?
Well, sir, I was at home. It was late.
You were looking forward to a night's weather and rest, no doubt.
I apologise, my lord. I have a nasal congestion.
Pray continue, Mr. Matthews.
Mrs. Hutchins?
I heard the prisoner come in. She was with a man.
You heard a man's voice?
Yes.
What time was that?
11:30.
Please tell the jury exactly what followed, Mrs. Hutchins.
After a little while, I heard a shout. A man's voice saying, "Give me my £5." And then the prisoner's voice said, "I will give you an account of that £5 presently." And then there was a noise.
What kind of noise?
Well, thumps. Loud thumps. There were three of them.
Three? You're certain of that, Mrs. Hutchins?
Yes, three. Then more shouts. Well, I couldn't make out what... But then the door opens and she comes down.
She?
Mrs. Herman. And she's carrying something. A bucket.
And you saw her?
Yes.
You saw the prisoner come down the stairs carrying a bucket?
Yes. She went to the sink at the back of the house. I went there later, in the morning, and that's where I saw the blood.
Where she had emptied her bucket?
Yes.
Dear old Matthews...
Sir?
The blood. His motto, always dwell on the blood, but he's not going to get away with it. Mrs. Hutchins, you heard a man's voice say, "Give me back my £5."
That is what I heard. I swear it.
You have sworn it, yes. Could it not have been, "Give me back my £1"?
No.
Could it not have been her voice? Could it not have been her voice, a woman's voice, not a man's, and the sum mentioned... £1 and not £5.
No, I heard £5 and a man's voice.
How can you be sure?
Because I was listening at...
At the door?
Yes.
See? Your ear was pressed hard against your door, all the better for gathering the scandal you long to hear about a woman whom you so strongly dislike. Isn't that the truth, Mrs. Hutchins?
The next evidence comes from Sergeant Kane. It's an age when a policeman's testimony is believed as a matter of course.
Sergeant Kane, you have testified that you know Mary Herman.
Yes, sir.
And have known her for some while.
Yes.
Do you know her to be a violent woman?
She has never been charged with violence.
Never been charged with violence before. And yet her own statement on this occasion, "The man tried to strangle me, I had to defend myself. He had already hit me with a poker, but dropped it. I thought he was going to kill me. I picked it up. I hit him." Does that statement surprise you?
Nothing surprises me.
Well, no. Particularly when you saw the mark on Mary Herman's head. You assumed she had retaliated. Is that not so?
No, sir.
Had acted out of fear and pain.
The mark on her forehead. I was just thinking, sir. Well... It's an old one.
I beg your pardon?
That mark, it's in our record, sir. She complained about it. It was caused some time ago. It weren't the deceased who did that.
You're lying to me.
No.
You told the police Stephen struck your head. That was a lie, wasn't it?
Yes.
Mary, you may sit in a sulk, but you must know the consequences. When we go back into court, we must appear clean, do you understand? The jury must find in you a victim, someone who had to defend herself against a violent man. That on its own will be hard enough. But at the moment they think you're a liar, and if you've lied once, why not throughout?
He tried to strangle me.
Yes, so you say.
I'm telling you the truth. Believe me, please, please.
The square, dark-chinned face, which now stares down at him from the witness box, is the son of the dead man. Marshal Hall notices a grimy collar and bitten fingernails.
You tell us, Mr. Stevens, that your father was a peace-loving man, a man of moderate strength, and never, in your knowledge, previously violent to women.
That's right.
A paragon, in fact.
Pardon?
A saint.
I never said that.
No. Could you tell the court what you do for a living?
I'm a horse trainer.
Wouldn't it be nearer the truth to say that you live with a prostitute, one Amy Chase, and that you live on her immoral earnings?
No.
And wouldn't it also be true to say that the house you live in is a disorderly house run by your mother, and that you have several convictions for stealing?
I don't remember.
How many times have you been in prison since 1892?
I don't remember.
I'll remind you. Four. And it is you who are telling us that your father was a peace-loving man. Isn't the truth, in fact, that your father, when drunk, used his abnormal physical strength to attack and beat women, and had done so many times before to your knowledge?
He was all right when he was sober.
But on this occasion he was blind drunk.
She killed him for his money.
I beg your pardon?
2 days before he died, he took out £5 from the bank. What happened to that then, if she didn't take it?
They've got a motive now, haven't they, sir?
Yes. Who's next?
The pawn shop woman.
We won't lose heart.
No, sir, but I...
If we lose heart, she'll hang.
Mrs. Angeles, you are the owner of a pawn shop on the Tottenham Court Road.
Yes, sir.
Did the prisoner ever visit your shop?
On the 15th of March, she came in and pawned a cloak.
How much did you give her for it?
10 shillings.
And did she visit your shop again?
Yes, she came back on the morning of the 16th of March.
I need not remind the jury that that is the morning after the death of Mr. Stevens. Please go on.
She wanted to buy furniture. I also sell second-hand furniture. She bought a bed, a table, and 2 chairs.
At a cost of?
£6.01.
So one day after pawning her cloak for 10 shillings, she was able to return with sufficient money to buy a large quantity of furniture valued at £6.01.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mrs. Angelus.
But now a small, self-important-looking gentleman beams from the witness box. It's the medical expert.
Would you mind telling us, Dr. Lloyd, how you believe the deceased died?
From hemorrhaging, caused by 6 blows to the top right-hand side of his head.
6 wild and random blows, that's what you've said?
Yes.
And they were delivered?
From the right-hand side, by a person standing behind the deceased, holding a poker in the right hand.
Raining blows?
Yes.
Probably downward?
Yes.
And not from the front?
No.
By a poker held in the left hand, for example?
Well, I don't understand. Are you saying the prisoner held the poker in her left hand?
Is it possible?
Well, she's right-handed. She's hardly likely to have hit him with her left hand, is she?
No. Not in normal circumstances, that is quite true. Now, just, would you bear with me? The deceased had another wound, did he not? Not on his head.
He had a contusion on his elbow.
His left elbow?
Yes.
His left elbow, you see, which he may have received, may he not, attempting to ward off blows on the right side of his head. Is that possible?
It's possible.
If that were the case, the blows would be coming from the front, not the back. You wouldn't, would you, receive a contusion on your left elbow if you were warding off blows coming from behind you and on the right side, only if they were coming from the front?
It's possible.
It's possible. But what if I'm wrong? What if, in fact, this contusion on his left elbow was caused when he fell forward on his left side, attempting to pin down a struggling person beneath him? A struggling woman, whose right arm was thus pinned, and who, in her desperation, picked up a poker she found on her left side, seized on it with her left hand, as I say, her right hand being trapped, are you following this, as her only chance of survival, and hit him 6 times in rapid succession, thus saving her life. Blows which you have described as wild and random.
Yes.
Such as might naturally be delivered by the imperfect power and directive force of the left hand on a right-handed person. Dr. Lloyd?
Yes. Yes, it's possible.
Thank you. Yes. Ah, Newton.
Any trouble, sir?
Give me something to smile at, Newton, and I'd smile. If only we had something on our side, only one thing, that's all it would take.
Do you think she did it?
What?
I mean, killed him. For his money.
No, I don't. Not for a minute. Newton?
Sir?
We'll have to pay another visit to Holloway. Mrs. Abraham, you are the matron at Holloway Prison, is that correct?
It is.
You have medical responsibility for the prisoner Mary Herman.
I do.
Could you tell the court what you found during the course of a medical examination you carried out on the prisoner yesterday?
She was complaining of a soreness around her throat. She has complained of this before, but we could see nothing. However, on this occasion, when I looked, I could see bruising, severe bruising.
Could you observe separate bruises?
Oh, yes, separate.
And how many?
5. When I put my hand on them, I noticed that each one corresponded to a different finger of my right hand.
Have you ever had experience of someone who has suffered strangulation?
Yes, I have.
Do you think it possible that these bruises were caused by a hand?
Oh, yes, I do. A man's hand, squeezing tightly.
The heart of the case is the woman herself. And a prostitute is judged even before she acts, and no matter what she says. Marshall Hall stands for his final speech. The knot of prejudice against his client remains. If he fails to undo that, she is lost.
On the evening of March the 15th, a woman met a man on Euston Road. We do not judge her. We must not judge her. She has 3 young children who depend on her. She was trying to earn money, perhaps God help her, in the only way she could. It is a meeting with tragic consequences. She finds herself alone in her room with a violent and drunken man who seeks to force her, having no money to pay, to an act both abhorrent and sordid. He forces her onto her back, pinning her down on the left side. He squeezes her throat with such pressure that he leaves the marks of his fingers. Desperate, frantic, she calls for help. These were the sounds Mrs. Hutchins heard. Not the baleful argument she, in her prejudice and spite, has interpreted them as, but a cry for help. Gentlemen, no help comes. Now there is no question in her mind he is going to kill her. Scrabbling around her for something, anything to defend herself with, she finds a poker. She grasps it as to a lifeline and does what any woman might. She defends herself. But no sooner done, after the act, filled with a womanly remorse, she bathes the wounds. She buys brandy to revive him. She lights a fire, fearing he is cold. And even goes out to a late chemist to buy bandages. But to no avail. On her return, to her horror, she finds that the old man, her attacker, has died. Fearful, panicking, foolish, she seeks to conceal his death. Gentlemen, you must cast away all obvious prejudice. Remember that these women are what men make them. And do not forget, even she at one time was a beautiful and innocent child. On the evidence before you, I almost dare you to find a verdict of murder. Look at her, gentlemen of the jury. Look at her. God never gave her a chance. Won't you?
The jury are out for a mere 45 minutes.
Foreman of the jury, have you reached a verdict?
We have.
What is your verdict?
We find the prisoner not guilty of murder, but guilty of manslaughter. And we wish to add a strong recommendation for mercy.
The quality of mercy didn't come easily to Mr. Justice Wills. Because of her attempt to dispose of the body, he sees fit to sentence her to 6 years penal servitude.
So we're at 410, then?
Mr. Marshall Hall.
Ah, Mr. Silcock. I didn't know that Sotheby's allowed their men to visit other auction houses.
We'd like to keep abreast of the enemy. After anything in particular?
You, I'm selling, as a matter of fact, a porringer.
The one you bought from us?
That's right. I'm rather hopeful of seeing a profit.
How much did you pay for it?
Oh, 310, something like that.
Do I hear 600? £600? Thank you, sir. Going then, this James II silver porringer for £600. Gone.
How stupid of me, Mr. Marshall Hall. I thought I'd beaten you.
Ah, yes, Mr. Silcock, but remember, it's from the jaws of defeat that we snatch our greatest victories.
Mm.
Mary Herman wrote to Marshall Hall from prison, calling him her saviour. Yet on her release she employed an attorney to write to the solicitor Arthur Newton, demanding an account of money spent on her defence. His reply was short and to the point. Dear sir, we saved your client from the gallows. His client in his next case needed all of Marshall Hall's skills. When his attempt to create an alibi for himself had proved to be a pack of lies, only Marshall Hall stands between him and the rope in the case of the Camden Town murder.
John Mortimer presented The Trials of Marshall Hall, dramatised by Michael Butt and directed by John Taylor, with Tom Baker as Sir Edward Marshall Hall, and featuring Timothy Block, Jonathan Taffler, David Glover, Zela Clark, Nicholas Farr, Jill Graham and Kate McHenry. The Trials of Marshall Hall is a Fiction Factory production for Radio 2.